Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. But today we're going to be talking about yard power. You've been hearing me all week talking about this wonderful book, Petscaping. And it's not only a visual that is absolutely captivating relative to landscaping and working with animals and doing all kinds of things, but there's so much information in this book. And both of the authors we have the opportunity to have on the air, Carolyn Doherty and Scott Cohen. Welcome, both of you, to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Donna. Good to be here.
Now, I wanted my audience to know a little bit about each of you. Scott, you have been involved in television. You have been involved in working with people in landscaping. This is really a passion of yours, especially if they have animals. And this is a concept that I don't think many people have really looked at unless they've had a number of animals and said, okay, this is what we need to do. If we have Siberian Huskies, we have a patch of dirt, a big patch of dirt so they can dig to their heart's content, and we have fences that are 14 feet high. But there's so much that goes on in your book that I think is so wonderful. And Carolyn, you add some magic to the book because you give training tips for dogs, and you've worked with animals for over 20 years. How do the two of you manage to connect and produce such a beautifully illustrated book, but also one that's so educational and informative?
Well, thanks for all your positive comments there, Donna. The, petscaping, as a landscape designer, I've been doing this with homeowners for about 25 years. And, you know, as time has gone on, pets have become kind of a bigger and bigger part of our lives. Gosh, some people even seem to care more about their dogs than they do their kids. But anytime you're sharing a yard with a dog, there's all kinds of challenges that go along with that. And, homeowners look to me to kind of solve those problems for them on the landscaping side. And for years I've tried to do that, but it's never just a landscaping solution. It's always 50% of it, at least, is training the dog or sometimes training the family to train the dog. And that's where the relationship with Carolyn came in.
Now, Carolyn, you absolutely love animals. This is your passion. Tell us how, when you connected with Scott, you evolved the information in your book. What made you decide that you wanted to do a book with Scott?
That is an excellent question. It involved us. We actually got to know each other socially first, and it just came up that what I did for a living and that I had this extensive experience working with animals, all kinds of animals, especially dogs. And he, shortly after we met, mentioned that he was a landscaper and had written books on a few different topics and said, hey, you know, there's one area that I've never seen a book in, and that's landscaping with the animals in mind. Would you be willing to help me with that? And I jumped right in and said, absolutely, because he's right. We looked around. There's really nothing else out there with this kind of information in it.
Well, I think it's extremely valuable. We have, my husband and I have, Scottish Terriers, and we've had them for years,
dogs.
And Terriers are absolutely notorious for being diggers. Now, my husband, when we put our fence around our property, he was very aware of Terriers, so he put a bit of concrete down about 3 feet so that if they'd started to dig, they'd keep hitting. Yeah, I mean, he really did it. When my husband does things, he really, really does them well. And they couldn't hope to get out of the yard. So where they might be tempted to get out, and the fence he designed didn't allow them to go under, and, of course, they can't jump that high. But the thing was, in your book, you bring out the fact with certain breeds, they're diggers, like this wonderful, adorable beagle that you've got a picture of. I think it's your dog, Scott.
She may look adorable, but that dog is nothing but trouble.
I love that dog, by the way.
Well, this picture of her is just priceless because it's like she's a person, and she's standing up on her hind legs, and she's got her head back, and she's like a ruling, and just, hello, you got to pay attention to me. I'm boss here. Listen to what I got to tell you. I just love this photo because you're laying back in a comfortable yard chair, and it's like, do I really have to listen to this? And she's there like, you know, yes, you do. But you have so many.
That dog gets plenty of attention.
Oh, I can believe that.
With the terriers that you have, I think one of our pet-scaping approaches to that would be to say, okay, this dog breed, it's natural for them to want a dick. So rather than just only stop them from getting out, from a landscaping standpoint, we would design an area where they could dig, you know, perhaps a little sandbox area or something like that, and then turning it over to the dog training part of it. In fact, we cover this in the book. Carolyn, how would you train them to dig there?
Exactly. So, we do mention, by the way, exactly what your husband did. So let him know. I think he's brilliant with the putting the concrete in underneath the fence. That's exactly what you do for a digger. And then, like Scott said, you would also set up a digging area, and then you train the behavior of digging in that area so the dog gets those needs satisfied. Because, you know, everything a dog does wrong, what we consider wrong in the yard, is really it doing what comes natural and what feels right to the dog. So with every issue that we deal with in the book, we not only go with a problem-solving approach for the yard, but also a way to satisfy that dog's needs in other ways that are not destructive and not a problem for you, and actually can become a very fun thing, like playing dig the hidden treasure out with your dog, and then it looks forward to it and doesn't need to go, you know, trying to poke around getting out from under the fence.
Well, terriers are especially notorious for having an ear for those little things called rodents, and we live out in a forested area, and believe me, when they decide they're going to visit us, then I'll go out in the yard and I'll see this magnificent hole, because they're hearing them. You know, there's hundreds of miles of tunnels in the forested area, because that's part of the natural environment. So this is all underground, and the moles use it and whatever else use it, and so during the cold season, they might decide to come and visit. So the terriers are just notorious for that, and it's something you have to be aware of. But something I learned from your book that I thought was really significant, and that was about using fences. We have had a very serious thing happen in the Seattle area, and it's really sad. But I have to be honest, I don't have too much sympathy for the victim, because this is a person that climbed over a 10-foot fence into someone's yard that had four pit bulls that were in the yard. And, of course, that person stepped into their territory. Now, I mean, we're talking about a real high fence, and the family was inside the house. These pit bulls went after this guy because he was in their space, and he shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't have been over that fence. So he's in the hospital right now, but the poor dogs are taken in, and it's just really sad to see something like that. People have animals, and they don't realize that the type of fence they use can actually cause harm to their animals. And the chain link, it didn't dawn on me. Of course, my dogs aren't climbers like some dogs will be, who are sharp and they figure out they can put their paws in the chain link fence and go over the top.
Right.
But my Scotties have no desire to do that. Address that, because that, to me, is very, very significant information.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It is absolutely true. The correct fencing for the correct breed is really important. And, you know, a type of fence that could be exactly right for one breed could be the perfect getaway for another. So it's so important to think about, you know, even if you have a mutt, you know, we talk about different mixes. Okay, we'll try to figure out the different types of dogs within that mix and look at their primary qualities, because that's going to tell you where you're going to have issues and what you need to address.
Go ahead, Scott.
You know, in the front of the book, we say, hey, what kind of woof? What type of dog do I have in the first place? And what are the natural characteristics for that breed? And then the whole section that we have on fencing is divided up to help you figure out which type of fence you would use for which type of dog. And for the new pet owner, we have kind of a safety checklist. where you can walk through the yard and make sure you're taking into account all the things you need to address before you bring, you know, a live animal into the backyard.
I agree with that, because it's too easy for the animals to become harmed. You know, I was looking at your photography in this book. It's just incredible. And you have this beautiful golden-haired dog. I don't know if it's a retriever, but there's like a fence made out of wrought iron, and there is a lower section to it that has points going up with rounded ends on those points, and then
right.
the fence goes up higher. And I thought, that's a fairly good-sized dog, but a certain dog might want to actually try to get through that. And you have to be aware of these things, because an animal could impale themselves, depending on the breed. But those sharp points do have the rounded point, you know, rounded piece on top of them. But animals do strange things, especially if somebody's wandering around that's not supposed to be outside the yard. That's their job. Their job is to protect their environment and their turf, and there's very few dogs that do not do that. So,
Donna, I'll tell you the most creepy.
Yes.
I have to tell you a story about the most creative dog encampment I've seen. Most creative use of avoiding spending money on fencing. Now, Carolyn wouldn't let me put this in the book.
Yes, Don, I'm making a face right now, by the way, that I'm horrified he's going to tell this story that I wouldn't allow in the book. So go for it, Scott.
Okay, you got to tell it, Scott. I mean, as soon as I know that, I've got to hear the story.
The client, I get to the house to do a design consultation, and the homeowner comes to the door, and with them they have a little dachshund, you know, those long wiener dachs.
Mm-hmm.
And the dachshund has one of those harnesses, walking harnesses, that's a full body harness down the side of the body.
Right.
And two pieces of PVC pipe, white sprinkler pipe, attached to the side of the dog. And I was looking at this, and I thought, my goodness, this is the silliest looking thing. What's the story here? Why do you have this? And, of course, this was before a book came out, so they didn't know what to do. But what they did is, instead of making the fencing smaller, like we did in that diagram, they made the dog bigger with the PVC pipe. So the dog couldn't get through the fence because she had pipes strapped to the side of her. So I had a picture of this, but Carolyn was afraid people might think we were recommending that.
I refuse to. being a trainer who takes a lot of pride in actually working with the dog and working with the dog's psychology and intelligence, I refuse to promote sticking PVC pipe on their body.
Well, you know, that is something.
It was a good idea. I just thought it was creative.
Right. And dachshunds are notorious. I had one named Skippy when I was a little girl. And when I was a little girl, there was a postman that would come by, and he would tease this dog incessantly. And little Skippy, one day, and there was just a little fence, and he couldn't jump over it. It was like a white picket fence. That little stinker wiggled through those picket fence slats and went after the mailman. Went after that mailman. The dog disappeared after that. I was just a tiny little thing, and I remember crying and crying. But it wasn't the dog's fault. It was the fault of my parents, number one, not being aware to make sure that the little stinker couldn't get out, and number two, not recognizing the temperament of this dog who was being abused by the postal carrier. And when I say abused, you don't do that with dogs. You don't tease them. You don't smack things up against the fence, and that's what this guy was doing. Now, so that's not good. Let's talk about grass. I live in the Pacific Northwest. You're down in Southern California. Some of our listeners might be in France, or they might be on the East Coast or the Midwest. Maybe they're from all over. Everybody has a different environment for grass. And in the Pacific Northwest, grass and moss seem to keep company with each other very readily. In Southern California, you have warmer temperatures, you have a lot of sun, and there's multitudes of grasses, clover, and all kinds of stuff. How do people go about determining what is going to work well with an animal? Because they urinate, and your grass is going to look this sunshine yellow. Well, maybe not sunshine yellow, but a yellow if you don't have the right grass. What do you recommend?
Well, it's an excellent question. You know, the type of turf that you select, and we kind of go through the top 10 varieties of turf that we recommend for yards with pets. But the type of grass that you choose sometimes depends on the type of dog that you have. There are some grasses that are green year-round, okay, And those are considered cool season lawns, and they have deeper roots, but they don't trail. Well, those types of grasses are fine for male dogs and smaller, you know, yards that have smaller dogs. But if you have a dog that's larger, that's going to have heavy foot traffic, you know, dogs, as they walk, they actually tear the turf. They don't just pack it down. When people walk across a lawn area, they compact it, so we have compaction problems. With dog traffic, we actually have the lawn being torn up. So a lawn type that is trailing, what we call warm season lawn, which means it's green in spring and summer but dormant in the winter, those types of grasses are more aggressive trailers, and they fill in from foot traffic better, and they also happen to handle salt tolerance better. And by salt, I mean urine. You know, when a dog pees on the lawn, a deeper rooting, hardy, warm season grass will handle that better, but those types of grasses don't do well in the shade. So you have to take into account your site conditions. Is there, you know, good sun, good shade, so that you plant the right type of turf that adapts to those site conditions, and then also the type of dog that you have, and actually gender comes into play. Because if you have a male dog will usually go around the perimeter of the property and lift his leg on the, you know, trees and posts and fire hydrants and whatever else you might have in your backyard.
Absolutely true.
Where a female dog has total disregard for anything like that and just pees wherever she wants to.
Okay, Carolyn. Now, we've got to address the latter statement that was just made. How can someone train their dog to use a specific area of the yard? And I know if you have a puppy, it's easier to start with a puppy. But what do we need to do to train an animal? What would you do with a puppy, and what would you do if, let's say, you adopted a rescue dog, or, you know, a dog that's older that maybe needed to learn this habit? What do we do?
Excellent question. So, and we definitely cover that in the whole chapter in the book. And, you know, puppies are maybe a little bit easier, but truly any new dog, I think it only gets a little bit hard if the dog's been in the yard and peeing wherever for a couple years, and then you try to switch it up. It's still possible, but that's a little harder because the patterns are already ingrained. But like you mentioned, if you get a dog from a rescue or somebody gives you a new dog and it's already an adult, that's just as easy to train, if not a little easier, because it's easier to work with an adult. With dogs, you know, they're creatures of habit. They're creatures of pattern. So anytime you want to train anything, and this is a great example, okay, I only want you to pee in this certain spot. Mm-hmm. So not only do you need to decide where you do not want them to pee, but obviously provide a really good place for them to pee. You get the dog, you for the first 4 to 6 weeks that you have it in that environment, every single time you take it to potty, you just walk it out on a leash or go with it if it's going to follow you without a leash and bring it to the spot you want to take it to. And any time it goes near the spot you don't want it peeing on, you just correct it gently but consistently. And it only takes 4 to 6 weeks to pattern just about anything into a dog's brain. And they'll get that. And once they know what they want you to do, they are so happy to have clarity on that they will do it over and over again, especially if you as the owner throw a little mini party every time. So you see them peeing where they're supposed to pee, and you give them a good dog and a little treat, and they will do that for you over and over again. So it's really not a difficult thing at all.
Wow. Now let's talk about something that you really bring out, which I thought, boy, I can relate to this, having had a Scottish Terrier puppy more than once, and how their little jaws, just like a human baby, will stick everything in their mouth. Everything has to be taste tested by little puppies. And one of the things that they can really damage are cables. And if you have outdoor cables that are above the ground, if you have sprinkler heads, they'll go and say, what's that? I wonder what it tastes like. Chomp, chomp. And then all of a sudden you've got something, dependent on the breed especially. You're either going to have a damaged sprinkler head, or you're going to have a problem. Maybe if the dog's really big and it's a big puppy, they don't even know their own strength, and they can literally tear sprinkler heads apart. How do we manage that for those people that have sprinklers in their yards and they say, oh, I just have had such a time with this? What do we do? How do we handle this?
Well, you're absolutely correct. One of the biggest problems we have with dogs in the garden is that they do cause damage to the sprinkler systems. And part of it is because water's coming out of the nozzle, and it's fun, or they're thirsty. And so they're trying to get at the water that's in the pipe. So, of course, the first thing that Carolyn would tell you is you've got to make sure you've got plenty of water in the yard for the dog. They have connectors that go on hose spigots. It's called Lixits and things like this that make it easy for the dog to get water whenever it wants water. With sprinkler heads, the biggest problem we see, especially with bigger dogs, is that they actually knock the heads over when they're running through the garden and playing or laying down into planter beds, and that we get broken heads and broken risers on those sprinkler heads. So we came up with a configuration called a swing elbow configuration for sprinkler heads, and there's a diagram in the book on how to put it all together so that when the dog knocks over a sprinkler head, you can kind of pull it back into position and without having any broken lines. So that's really helpful.
That's fabulous. Yes. And you also talk about if you have an air conditioning machine, how you can, that's outside the building, that might be in the yard, anything that can be exposed that the animal, out of curiosity, either could be injured by because of an electrical current charge or could damage, to put something around it so they can't get to it. You have something here, an air conditioning unit. This just absolutely was amazing. Part of it had been eaten away because the dog was urinating on it all the time.
Exactly. You wouldn't expect that, but that stuff can be pretty powerful when when used over
Absolutely.
And over again.
Absolutely. Now, I really like the point you bring out in the book about the raccoons. Here in the Pacific Northwest, they are abundant. And you give some excellent tips about raccoons that I think are very significant, and people need to hear this because I wasn't aware that the fecal matter from raccoons actually has parasites that can transfer to your animals, to you too, if they should defecate in your, in your area. So you need to be aware of these things. Tell us that and how they discovered that, if you will, and then also anything else that we need to be aware of relative to raccoons coming into one's yard. I know most of the time, at least at our house, they don't like dogs, so they'll do everything they can to avoid them.
For sure. A lot of the pests that we have in the yard that our dogs are exposed to, fleas, ticks, and parasites and that sort of thing, are often brought in by wild animals, and raccoons being one of them. So when raccoons come into your yard, the types of things that raccoons like to eat are grubs that are below the turf. They want those earwigs and grubs. And what they'll do is actually roll the sod back. They'll tear part of it up and roll it back as if it's sod to get down to that food source and eat those grubs. So really the best way to control the raccoons in the backyard is to take away their food source. And there are some, there's a variety of different pesticides, some a lot more safe than others, that can be used to reduce the insect pressure, reduce the amount of insects and grubs that are in the soil so that it does not attract the raccoon in the first place. You were talking earlier, Donna, about the moles and the critters that visit your yard. And, those critters, that's where the fleas and the ticks and things and worms that dogs get affected with come from. It's from these visiting rodents. And one great way to control keeping these rodents out of your yard is to keep the lawn from going to seed. Okay? Now, all these types of rodents they'll feed off of the seed. So they'll eat the seed off of weeds or grass. If you let the lawn grow too tall and it gets all those little seed heads on it, that's a great invitation to mice and rats and squirrels and everything else to come visit your yard. And all those things are carrying fleas and other parasites that can affect your animals. So we talked about one of the best ways to reduce use of pesticides in your backyard is to control the maintenance and keep those rodents out of the yard in the first place.
I had to chuckle because you have a section about dog houses. And there's a cartoon on one page, "Do you need a doghouse? We're talking for your dog, not your husband." And there's this adorable cartoon that's on the one page about the husband being in the doghouse, which I thought was adorable. But I was blown away by some of these doghouses. Good grief. I know people that might say, gee, I think I'd want to live in one of these. These are mansions for dogs. Unbelievable. But you also show doghouses that the average person could very easily bring in. But that's an issue, that with many breeds, having them outside, you've really got to pay attention, dependent on what the environment is. There are dogs like huskies. They love to sleep in the snow. They are malamutes. They have those thick, deliciously beautiful coats, and they don't mind sleeping in the snow. My Scottish Terrier doesn't like it at all. So who really should look at having a doghouse, and what do we have to do and pay attention with this? And in the yard, what should we pay attention to?
Well, I personally think every dog should have a doghouse outside, which is not to say I think every dog should sleep outside, but I think they should have that option. I think all too often we just assume that our dogs would much prefer to always be inside if they're not, you know, running or peeing, and I actually disagree. I think they very often enjoy just the outdoor air and the sunning themselves and getting a little bit of weather. But they do need some sort of a den box, and they need that inside as well. Dogs really love a small, you know, dark, enclosed place to be, whether that's a crate or a dog house or a dog glue or, you know, any of these little places, because they are den animals. They evolved from wolves, which are den animals, and they really So many behavioral problems that you see both indoors and out with dogs with anxieties and getting into trouble and destructive behaviors often mm-hmm. come from them not having a calm, quiet, small place to go. Again, like a dog house or a little dog crate inside and out. And as we detail in the book, you want to get something that's big enough for the dog to be comfortable, but not huge. They're not looking, you know, they're not in need of a big place to go, a separate room. They really need some place that's just exactly big enough for them to stand up comfortably and then lay down and feel, you know, in the same way we get that comfortable feeling when we're in our own bed at home. That's how they mm-hmm. feel when they're in a doghouse. So mm-hmm. I find them very important and absolutely essential.
Not all my clients agree with Carolyn's idea of a small doghouse. And as you're looking through some of these pictures here, these clients have spent $20,000 or $30,000 to create a whole side yard environment for the dog,
mm-hmm.
With a pond and a sunning area of a deck and a bridge that crosses over and into a doghouse that looks like it could be a miniature home.
You know? Yes.
It looks like a place. In fact, if I had, next time I get thrown out into the doghouse by my wife, that's where I want to be.
I agree. Well, I know we're just about out of time here. This has been wonderful. Your book, Petscaping, is a visual experience. It's marvelous. Scott, all of the photography and the information you give about landscaping is terrific. Carolyn, your dog tips, training information, wonderful information about if people have a pool, what they need to do. Just various things about textures like rocks, if you wanted to put that in your yard. So many different points of information that I don't think many of us even give 10 seconds of a thought to. We just do what we do and don't recognize about the variables that we can be involved with. Your website, petscaping.tv, petscaping.tv, is coming into play, and people are going to actually be able to see a lot of videos and check you out on that. So for those of you listening, petscaping, training, and landscaping with your pet in mind. They've even got a wonderful picture here of a possum climbing up a special apparatus to get out of a pool. Fascinating stuff. I just think you'd really enjoy it. Scott Cohen and Carolyn Doherty, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having us.
Donna, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Well, it's just been a joy. Petscaping, go to petscaping.tv and find out more. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. We'll be back in just a moment.
You have children between the ages of 3 to 10. Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a guest, a very special guest today. His name, well, it's Daryl Nisnik. And Daryl has done something very special. He's written a book called Mary's Son. It's a tale of Christmas. He's been awarded a Mom's Choice Award honoring excellence. This book is absolutely wonderful. Not only would it make a great gift, but it is something that I think adolescents would really relate to. It's the type of book, the type of story that could easily become a Christmas traditional to share with kids and adults alike. I want to welcome you to the show, Daryl.
Thank you very much, Donna. I appreciate being here.
You have quite an interesting background. Now, you have been involved with law practice. You were a president of a real estate development company. And then you decided you were going to become a writer. When did that big aha happen?
The aha was happening my whole life. And I realized as I was coming to a certain point in my business career that I needed to do it now or I was never going to do it. And I was very excited to be able to get the opportunity. It's wonderful. It's wonderful work. And I really enjoy the passion that I now have for getting up and putting word on paper.
Well, I found it so interesting that your first publication was actually a political thriller. And
yes.
And its title is The Third Term. Now, I've not read that, but I thought, a thriller, and it's about politics, and then you go to writing A Tale of Christmas. I mean, that's more than 180 degrees separate. That is just an incredible shift. Is this a story that you were telling to your kids, or how did this story of these adolescents, both from different sides of the financial track, come into your head? What was the stimulus for it? Was it a story about your life or somebody you knew?
Not specifically about my life or anyone we knew, but it came from, number one, my love of Christmas, and number two, my concern at the weak Christmas fare that's out there, at least in my perception. And several years ago, I told the story, Donna, as you were referring to there, to my daughter and a group of friends on her birthday. She's a Christmas Eve baby. And
oh, my goodness.
That has a whole bunch of different stories to it, but with this one, after my wife and I had taken these kids out for a birthday day, my wife looked at me and said, I need help here. So I sat down and told them this story, and they were enthralled. I was just so thrilled with that reaction. And I decided to put it in book form.
Well, what I like is that it's very realistic about two young kids. One's a very angry young man, very much like what we would see portrayed in a lot of the news reports about young boys getting into trouble, doing things they shouldn't do, first-time offenses, all of this stuff. He's very poor. He comes from really a pretty ugly environment. And then you have the other character, a young lady who is just a real, and I'm going to use my word, she's a real little snit. She just has this attitude, and it's this arrogance. And what it really is that she's from the wealthy side of the financial tracks, and she's in a lot of pain, so she develops this demeanor. And then there's this wonderful evolution of your story where they come together, interact in ways that wouldn't be expected.
No.
And I really think that's the magic of the story, because you portray a very realistic way of looking at how young people will evolve in their attitudes, their positionings of authority within their own peer groups, etc. You bring that forward in the book in a marvelous, marvelous way.
And, Don, I appreciate that you see that, because when I was writing this, the challenge in writing a story like this in something short enough that people can read in the week before Christmas or even a couple of sittings before Christmas and do it every year, the challenge is in creating characters that live. And I really wanted to do that. I didn't want to write the insipid, I've mentioned this before, the stuff that we see on TV every Christmas. And from the reaction I've gotten, Donna, from some of the young people and adults who have read it, I'm just, I think I hit on that. And I'm so happy about it.
Well, you should be.
Yeah, it brings the meaning of Christmas to life, I guess.
Well, what I like is the guy, Nicholas.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I really think Nicholas is a hoot. I really do, because he goes to work for someone, and they can't figure out how he does what he does. He comes in wearing tennis shoes, and all of a sudden, they're now dress shoes. And you have a comment in your book, and I'm going to quote from it exactly.
Okay.
A lot of adults forget. They start thinking the thing forgotten doesn't exist. Then they teach their children to forget, and it starts a terrible cycle of lost hope.
Oh.
And boy, I read that in the book, and I went, bingo. That's exactly, as a society, where we are right now. We have so much gobbledygook that's going on that's put out there, and people just feel like, well, what are we going to look forward to? We just have no hope. That's not real. You have to be able to have a different vision. You have to look past what's there, say, okay, we're up to our noses in poop right now, but by golly, we can dig our way out and take a shower, scrub up real good, use white vinegar, and the poop's going to be gone. Won't even have this.
Right on.
We can clean this up.
Right on.
We can clean it up.
So right on. And what it takes is for somebody to stand up and take a stand, not be afraid, I'm going to offend, I'm going to be politically incorrect. No, you got to stand up and take a position that you know is right, something that is honorable and good, and that's what I tried to do here. I want to remind people of the goodness of Christmas, of the giving that comes from the ultimate message of Christmas, instead of the taking that, you know, our whole society is experiencing right now, you know, the divisiveness in Congress and all of that. If we don't step back, if we'd all just step back and, as you say, a little bit of vinegar, clean it off and say, hey, I like you. I want to help you. We would be so much better off.
Be problem solvers instead of wallowing in problems that have evolved. And let's get it out of there. Let's clean it up and get the show on the road. That's one of the many points that you have in this book. And you also have a Pinford Children's Home. And Sarah goes through a learning experience with that. This is someone who's, she portrays, in my view, a lot of what goes on socially. What we do not have experience with, what we have never been able to see, we watch so much television that we think, nah, that's all made up. It isn't.
Yes.
There are realities in life, and that's what you bring across in this book. And both the boy Jared, who has one aspect of reality that he's lived with a mother and siblings that he loves dearly, he doesn't know how to handle all of his various responsibilities, and he becomes almost panicky. And he's put in a position of being a leader, and he's not a leader because he's just going by his emotional, well, what do I want to say, the emotional seat of his pants without any knowledge, and that's what he does. And then you have Sarah, who's got her own emotional seat of the pants situation, and they both learn a great deal, and good old Nicholas is right in there, and he's really having a challenge because he's got to figure out how he can reach them to show them they have different perspectives they need to develop.
Exactly.
It's just an incredibly well-done book.
One thing I just wanted to comment on, that scene that you describe in the Pinford Children's Home, I, in writing the book and rewriting it and editing it and redoing it, I have read the book perhaps 500 times. And every time I read that scene, I still get tears in my eyes. And, you know, I'm supposed to not say something like that, but it's a reality. I get emotional about the scene.
Well, and that's the way it should be. Now, Daryl, this is a book. Where can people get it? What is your website?
My website is marysun.com. But it can be, the book can be gotten at any bookstore, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and any number of others. And it's doing quite well this Christmas, and hopefully people get it and enjoy it and read it every Christmas.
Well, I think that's definitely what could be done. For those of you listening, if you're wondering about a gift to share with people or you want a stocking stuffer, Mary's Son, A Tale of Christmas is absolutely marvelous. Daryl Nizik is the author. Let me spell his last name. It's N like Nelly, Y, Z like zebra, N like Nelly, Y, K. This is a wonderful book. It's a classic. It's never going to grow old. And I think it's something that just touches the hearts and minds of anyone who is going to read it. Go to his website, marysun.com, and you'll find more information there. And check your bookstore and go online, and I think you're going to be very pleased with your choice. Daryl, we're out of time. I'm so delighted you were able to join me. Thank you so much, and I wish you nothing but continued success with your writing.
Thank you, Donna, and Merry Christmas to you and all of your listeners.
Thank you so much, Daryl. The same to you and your family. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-582-5604.
872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back, and I'm just so delighted you're able to spend this day with me. Now, if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here's the telephone number to call in to, 888-627-6008. Remember, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Then after that, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. After that, I'll give you my information, my perceptions, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. 888-627-6008. Well, for those of you who have been listening to the program regularly, you know that I'm out here in Portland, Oregon, broadcasting live. Tomorrow, I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Wellness Center in Portland, Oregon. For address and other information, go into my website, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the calendar portion, and you'll have all of the details about the time. It's from 1 to 5, so we are going to be doing readings there. There's going to be a belly dancer. We're going to have crystal bowls there. There is a woman that is very skilled with working with them, and she's going to be playing them for us. And so it's going to be an incredible afternoon. So do give a call, and or not call, check my website, get all of the information, go to CindyMcGonigle.com, that's CindyMcGonigle.com, and you can find the information posted there as well. Okay, open line, 888-627-6008. I have 2 more months to go with the 2012 winter horoscopes. We've got Aquarius and Pisces left, so let me finish it off for you, and we'll be raring to go. Okay, those for those of you that are born under the sign of Aquarius, your home life, your home, your family is a strong source of pride. You really want to not only give the best to your family, but you want your family to be able to demonstrate the best of who they are. So you may decide that you're wanting to make some changes in your living environment. 2012 is a great time for you to look at that. Want to upgrade something? Maybe you want to move to a new home. Starting off in January, you're going to have the opportunity to think through what it is that you really want to do and get it done. Now, if you're one of those Aquarians that's been looking for work, you're trying to find something that's really going to fit you as an individual, well, be prepared. You're going to really have to be determined, and you're going to have to be willing to put the energy out there so that you will get your positioning. Well, let's see. I think about the middle of January to the first part of February is a real good period for you to work with. So that, and I know we've got a caller. Before I go to the caller, let me finish up with Aquarius. When it comes to travel, when it comes to winter, by golly, go for the gold. Try, you know, entering contests. You're going to have such good luck on doing so many, many things. And if you need a new car, shop around because you'll be able to find what you really want. A lot of travel? No. It looks like you're going to be really conservative with your money. You're going to try to figure out what it is you want to do and how much you're going to need to do it, and then you're going to plan accordingly. Well, let's get to our caller. Welcome, caller. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Alicia from California.
Hi, Alicia. Where are you in California?
The Sacramento County.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you should be comfortable. You're probably toastier than we are up here in the Pacific Northwest. I know it's a real warm place during the summer.
Yes, it is.
All right, Alicia, let's get down to business with you. The first thing I'm looking at is stay organized. There's a part of you that is feeling a little bit overwhelmed, and you're wondering, is it worth the effort of my continuing to be so disciplined in certain working patterns? I want to say, yes, it is. Your consistency is going to pay off. You're ready for a shift and for a change, but you haven't gotten everything into its correct positioning. And I'm seeing you wanting to work with software, and you're wanting to become more educated regarding social networking and so many other modalities. And after a while, you get dizzy. I know exactly how you feel. You just think, oh, yeah. Is this ever going to come together? Yes, it is. But it's going to be an ongoing process, too. So it's important for you to take some time for yourself. Just get away from all electronic stuff. Just take a walk around the block or find a place where you can have just the pure pleasure of looking at beautiful things and not have to worry about being so stressed, because you have a side of yourself that's very much the perfectionist. And if you're not careful, it's going to exhaust you. So you need to take a break and play. That's the best way I know how to say it. And it can be done different ways, maybe going to a museum, maybe visiting with a friend and having chocolate and chocolate and chocolate. It just could be any number of variables. But just do something for yourself. Do something for yourself and step away from the very disciplined, rigorous environment that you put yourself into, because you are a hard worker, and you need those breaks. That gives you a chance to breathe and to rejuvenate. So do it on a regular basis. Sometimes make it a whole weekend. You'll be happy. What would you like to ask me about, Alicia?
Well, I'm a massage therapist, and I've been feeling, like you mentioned, there's going to be a change, some kind of new avenue or something. I am kind of fallen into being the support, financial support for my family, and it's a burden. I can't support all of our needs, and I'm needing to find something new, something that brings in more to
all right,
to
first,
make ends meet.
Yeah, you're very disciplined, but I want you to take a breather. I want you to realize that you can get some help with this. And all you need to do with the family, and this is going to sound rather simplistic, and I'm talking quickly because we're almost out of time, but I want you to realize one thing. I want you to realize that you can keep your family informed and tell them, I'm a bit overwhelmed, and we're going to really have to work this through. And involve the family members then in a way, and if they say, well, you're doing such a good job, you say, yes, I am, but I'm exhausted. So we're going to need to have a conversation about this. But in a way, this is a spur for you to expand your own paradigms. So I want you to have some days off where you're just not doing anything. Don't worry about it, and just realize that you're going to be able to do what needs to be done. You're going to be fine. You're going to weather this situation, but you're going to also have to learn how to say no to some of the members of family and say, this is no longer acceptable. But you're going to have time to think it through, dear. You're going to do fine.
Okay.
You really are. Alicia, I'm sorry to have to cut you off, dear, but we're out of time.
That's okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, I'm just delighted. Delighted you called, and you have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Alicia. This is Donna Sebo. I'm here in Portland, and I'm out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. You have a marvelous weekend. Before we know it, ho, ho, ho is going to be banging on the chimney, if you've got one, or doing his magic act one way or the other. But enjoy yourself. Take time to appreciate the many blessings you've got. You've got a great life. There's a lot of things to be grateful for. Move forward. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.